coming to you live from a hot dog farm. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me, as always, are wiggly pink sprouts as far as the eye can see. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 58, That's Some Good Moosin'.
You know that that tradition they have at weddings where the guy, he goes up his wife's dress and he takes her garter off and shoots it into the crowd so that all of his male friends can, you know, grab at it like a pack of angry wolves?
Yeah, it's weird and creepy.
I hate that and it's stupid. That has nothing to do with our episode, but I wanted to get it out there.
Okay.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we're going to shoot a garter of knowledge into your crowd of hungry wolves today. We're glad to have you here on the show.
Sure.
Made you uncomfortable, didn't it?
Everything you say makes me uncomfortable.
You must be uncomfortable a lot.
I'm uncomfortable pretty much all the time.
But we're here. We got a segment for you. We're going to start today's show off with a little bit of good old-fashioned theme balling. You ready to ball some theme?
I'm ready to theme some balls.
Wait.
Wait, what's the segment?
Theme balling is a segment where each of us flicks a theme at the other guy, or balls it, as you might say, and the other guy has to then spitball a game based on the theme that has been balled at him and just talk about it for a bit.
So just a lot of balling going
on. There's just
a
lot of
balls to the left of me and balls to the right.
And here I am stuck in the middle with balls. We had the same idea for that joke, and we said it at the same time. You know, in some cultures, that means we're married.
We are already married.
It's true.
Would you like me to ball you a theme first, or would you like to ball me a theme first?
Do we have a coin flip? We could do a coin flip for who theme balls first.
Where are we going to get a coin?
I don't know. I'm broke.
Hold on a second. Echo, flip a coin. You got tails. We should decide which is which first.
I'll take heads next time.
Okay, so I guess I am tails. Once more. Echo, flip a coin. Which of us was what?
Your heads.
So you're going first.
Does that mean I get balled a theme first, or I ball the theme
first? I hate you.
I'll ball a theme at you. Are you ready?
Yes.
You.
I don't know. Let's flip a coin.
Shouldn't we be rolling d20s for that, really? Like making a check?
Okay, so like your odds and I'm evens, or what?
I don't know.
I feel like a coin is the best way to have done what we just did.
No, but what if one of us has a higher mod than the other? You know, like.
But we don't.
Oh, that's true. We're the same person. Dude. Slight sidetrack.
Uh-huh.
I found my first D&D character sheet ever today, which is to say my wife found it and put it on my desk.
That's embarrassing, I bet.
It's second edition D&D. Like, there's Thaco and stuff on there.
Uh-huh.
It's Cray. Cray, totes adorbs.
Etc.
I had a halberd. My character, that is. I didn't actually have a halberd. My strength is 18 slash 74.
How's this from a regular bird?
Its name is Hal.
Ah.
My strength is 18/74, and I don't know what that means.
Nor do I.
Fair enough. Your theme that I'm going to ball to you now. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Your theme is elevators.
Ugh.
Elevators.
So you're doing that thing where you repeat the question or statement again, just slowly, you know, in case it's very... Anytime anyone does that, it takes me back to taking standardized tests, and it's the worst.
I wondered why you had ripped all of my ribs out.
Yeah, well,
like I was curious.
Hungry, actually. That was the main thing.
My ribs aren't very meaty.
They're not good ribs.
There's not much meat on them bones.
No.
There's a lot of bones on them meat, though.
And there's marrow, so I could make soup. Or just marrow. Apparently, in some places, they just eat marrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear it's good. But it seems gross. Like, I'll try it, but I want to try it prepared by someone who actually does that, not like by my wife who's like, Some places eat marrow, so I just microwaved these bones here.
Where my dad's from, they eat cow tongue. Apparently, my mom ate it once she was with dad. And she was like, yeah, you know, it tasted fine. I probably would have been okay with it. Except that Grandma Rich served it. It was just a tongue on a plate, like just bleh. Just there was like the full tongue, and then she just sliced it up, and that was too much.
Yeah.
Which I kind of wonder now, was that actually how cow tongue was generally served, or was Grandma Rich just messing with mom?
I'm going to guess it was the second, because as I've heard, I've never had cow tongue.
Mm-hmm.
But I always hear it's good on a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it's probably generally served pre-sliced.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, less tongue-looking.
Right, right.
But I could be wrong. I don't know.
I've never had cow tongue.
I'd try it.
I'd try it, yeah.
I don't think I would be bothered by the fact that it was just a tongue on a plate either. Mm-hmm. But something is wrong with my brain. So.
It's true.
You know, there's that. Mm-hmm. Elevators.
Elevators. Or, to bring it from the French, elevatoire.
Did you know that the word escalate, linguistically, is younger than the word escalator?
So like we...
Which was invented for the product, the escalator.
So wait, we invented moving stairs, and then we took the word escalator and turned it into the verb escalate.
Yeah. Or so I've been told. As I'm telling you this, it feels so wrong, I have a hard time believing it myself.
It does feel very incorrect.
But I heard it on another podcast.
And we all know podcasts are 100% sources of truth.
Nope, it's true.
That's amazing.
Escalade was a word from which escalator came, according to this etymology map I'm looking at. And then escalate follows. Yep. From the 1920s. Initially meaning only to travel on an escalator.
That's beautiful.
I love language.
It's such a
It's
mess.
So ridiculous.
Yep.
That said, I still don't know what to do with a game about escalators.
Ahem. Like elevators.
Oh, even worse. No, I don't know. Like my initial thought was Sim Tower. Did you ever play Sim Tower?
I played Sim Tower, yeah.
You had to build a tower,
mm-hmm.
and it was full of Sims, which were not called that at that point, I don't think, but mm-hmm. Maybe they were. And there were elevators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember because you could build like you had like regular elevators and express elevators and freight elevators, and you had to set them up and you could time and prioritize different floors and stuff, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I'd play that again if I had a copy.
Yeah. I've been playing that Fallout Shelter game on my phone,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot like Sim Tower. You build a vault.
Mm-hmm.
You even have elevators. You need them to go up and down. It's not quite as resource managey, I think, as the mm-hmm. Sim games were, though.
Sure.
So building a thing, it just doesn't feel all that interesting. It doesn't feel like, it feels like just I took elevators and did a thing that had elevators in it. So I don't think that's fair. I wonder, maybe a game where you're all elevator attendants and you have to make the most money and tips as an elevator attendant.
Okay.
So really you could take the same game and do it with bathroom attendants. It's basically like a game about getting tips at a job that is unnecessary and shouldn't exist.
So like, is there like a queue of elevator riders, like cards or something that are lining up and you have to bid on them to get like lure them onto your elevator?
Yeah, that might be it. I like that. So there's like an elevator lobby with a certain number of elevators and you have to lure people on, but you also might have to do things.
Well, eventually you probably have to take them to their floor.
Well, sure. But like, I mean, beyond just the button pressing of an elevator. But I actually like your idea better because I don't know how much, like a bathroom attendant, you know, there's mints and hand towels and potentially like mm-hmm. shoe polishing and all kinds of weird crap. But an elevator attendant just has to dress snappy and be polite. And
what if there's mints and shoe polish and bathrooms on your elevator?
Well, but I don't think there ever were. I guess it doesn't have to be accurate. It could be whatever.
You could have a toilet elevator.
You should not, probably, you probably shouldn't. Well, so I learned through the SysAdmin subreddit that freight elevators often have operators still,
mm-hmm.
even though they are most of the time not all that different from a regular passenger elevator.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it is often a union position. And so I learned about it because someone was... there was a delivery of, like, an entire data center's worth of hardware that was going up a skyscraper, and the delivery was late, or the elevator operator had knocked off earlier, or whatever. But whatever the case, because it was a union position, no one else was allowed to run the elevator. And so they ended up having to cart all of this hardware up the stairs.
God.
Because most of it was too big to fit in the passenger elevator, and it was a mess. And I believe they ended up throwing a server rack by accident down an abandoned elevator shaft, like from the 13th floor or something.
How do you do that by accident?
It started to roll back. Someone grabbed a door handle on a door that should have been locked that opened to this maintenance shaft or abandoned elevator shaft or whatever it was. And it swung open because it wasn't locked, even though it should have been. And then the thing went through the doorway down the shaft to the basement.
I see.
So anyway, it could be that there is more to operating certain kinds of elevators, but I don't think it's the case. So I guess the fun in this game is going to be luring passengers to your elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess if we're talking money, everyone's an elevator operator. You have your money that you make as your pay has to be kind of out the window. You can't really, maybe you have a small budget of, you know, $10 or whatever to start with, but any money that you're going to spend to lure in passengers is going to have to come out of your tips, which you're trying to get from those passengers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be kind of a, excuse me, how much do I invest in mints and shoe polishing and whatever other incentives to get a passenger on my elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Like how much do I want to invest in those things for the return that I expect to get from passengers and tips?
Right. You could do like a time thing too, where,
yeah,
you know, you want to minimize you want to have short trips so you're not away from the lobby for very long.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's going to be the most fun as a real time game.
Mm-hmm.
So the lobby fills up with people. And so in addition to like trying to incentivize passengers to get to your elevator, you're also trying to figure out like, is it really worth taking the CEO of the company all the way up to his penthouse top floor office? Or do I want to only do shorter trips so that I can be sure to be back down in the lobby to pick up more passengers when I need to get there? And I guess in this situation, we're assuming everyone takes the elevators up, but the stairs back down again. Because otherwise, I don't know. There's probably a way to do it, but I feel like in my mind right now, trying to figure out how to pick up people on every floor in addition to dropping them off just gets really messy really
fast.
Yeah,
that's complicated.
Well, at least on a big enough building.
And especially if you're trying to do it real time.
Yeah.
That's hard.
And I guess it's not unfair because there are in a lot of big skyscraper buildings, there are express elevators,
mm-hmm.
you know, that only go down, or you know, you can only take this elevator if you're going to the like 15th, 30th, or 45th floor, whatever it is. So I guess it's a potential thing
mm-hmm.
that could happen. I guess that's kind of what I got. Do you have anything to add? I don't feel like it's turbo fun right now. I like the real time element. I like the mm-hmm. sort of how much do I invest versus how much do I get. I'm not really clear on how you would differentiate between what kind of passengers are likely to tip, like what makes a passenger more likely to tip and
right.
likely to tip well, and who do you try to attract? So there'd have to be some kind of correlation between like, I'm not going to have, you know, mints. I'm going to have back massages, but that's only going to attract people. But they also cost money. So that's only going to attract the people who,
right.
or whatever it is, you know,
the only thing I've got floating around is what if we make it a space elevator?
Ooh.
That way there's a reason why your elevator is so luxurious.
It's because you have to be in it
for a couple days. Yeah.
Space elevator is a good game title.
It is a good game title.
And then you could go very like Galaxy Trucker with it and add like there are you know, small pieces of debris in low orbit orbit, and you need to invest in shields or small weapons or lasers to make sure things don't hit your elevator box.
You could make it a word game too, like have a word game element to it and call it Spellevator.
I want to be mad at you, but I also want to play that game.
The longer the word you spell, the faster the elevator goes.
Man, that wouldn't be a terrible app, frankly.
No, that would be.
As far as phone games go, I don't care for them for the most part, but word games, oh man.
Do you ever play Bookworm Adventures?
Yes, Bookworm Adventures was my very favorite. I was never enough to pay for it. Mm-hmm. If it still exists and it's available, I might now. But yeah, I really liked that game.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun.
I just played Bookworm, just regular old Bookworm, mm-hmm. a fair amount. I think I even had that on my Palm Pilot. Bookworm. In Days of Yore.
Bookworm.
Well, I guess we have sort of the skeleton of a game.
Yeah, it'd be a game I'd play. Maybe, I don't know.
All right, you ready for yours?
Yeah, ball me a theme.
Cannibalism.
Cannibalism.
Yeah.
Hmm. Let's see here. So the simple way would be you are explorers on a Polynesian island back in the day and you want to avoid being devoured by cannibals. That's boring. We don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you want to be the cannibals in one way or another.
Agreed.
To make this game really, really pop, you know. I don't know if I want to go with like the because there's basically two avenues you go with. You either go with like savage tribesmen cannibals,
uh-huh.
or you go like Hannibal Lecter style.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure which one is more intriguing as a board game.
Mm-hmm.
I think, okay, here's how I would do it. I think is what I would go with. So like the thing with cannibalism you often hear is like you eat your enemies to gain their strength.
Yep.
Right. So I would do like a sort of war game thing,
mm-hmm.
where this is probably not okay. You're
whatever.
You're members of a tribe that's going to war with another tribe,
mm-hmm.
and you want to kill and eat the strongest enemy warrior to gain their strength.
Oh, so you're thinking all of the players are in the same tribe, I mean, you're more competing for eating the most enemy warriors rather than...
Yeah, not only eating the most, but yeah, killing and eating the best enemy warriors. It's not even about most.
But the best.
Because like, if I eat 11 like chumps and you eat one chief, you're doing better than me.
But depending on how you do it mechanically, you may need to eat a few chumps to get yourself leveled up to a point where you could take a chief.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. So I think I would do it in multiple phases. I would do like a battle phase where you fight the enemy and you score for killing enemies. Like there's a little bit just for the act of being victorious in battle.
Uh-huh.
And then you drag the corpses of the dead back to your village. And then there's a second feast phase where I would set it up where you don't necessarily get... You, like, have to bid for which people you get to eat.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I might... And you might get to start with, like, an automatic bid on people you killed.
Sure.
So you get, like, maybe a freebie coin or two or whatever the currency is on them. But, like, you then have to try to bid and get it and get the best ones. But also, I would keep secret exactly how valuable they are.
Okay.
So you don't know exactly what you're getting, but you've got a rough idea.
You could take it, take the bidding thing a little further, and you know, like maybe you know which cards are whose,
uh-huh.
or maybe you even know which of your own cards are. So everyone's cards are in the middle. Everyone's, mm-hmm. you know, warrior cards or whatever, and you might know, like you have a chief in there that's really worth a lot, and so the bidding could become a game in itself in that. You might bid a lot on a card of your own because you know it's a chief and you want to make sure you get it. Or you might bid a lot on a card of your own because you want it to look like
right. It's
really good and trick other people into bidding on it so that they waste whatever it is that they have to bid shrunken heads while we're being, you know, anthropologically insensitive.
Right, right.
And then be like, haha, that was actually just like some peasant,
mm-hmm.
and I was just tricking you into... my lousy take.
I think I would add to an element of boasting. So like if before the battle you boast that you're going to take on the chief of the rival tribe, but then you don't, like you get a penalty, but if you succeed in your boast,
uh-huh.
and the bigger the boast is, the bigger your bonus.
Uh-huh.
I don't know exactly how that worked, but I've thought that would be a cool mechanic for a while now. And then I would have players like maybe do three battles and three with three feasts, and at the end of that, he who consumed the greatest quantity of royal flesh is the winner.
Nice. I kind of like where you went with it. I had a similar thought, but I went down in my mind a path more with rival tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying about, you know, someone like you gain the power of the person you eat or whatever. You might have different, each tribe might have a slightly different mythology or whatever attached mm-hmm. to why.
Oh, okay.
And so they, but it works. They all work. They're all correct. So you've got a little bit of a asymmetrical thing mm-hmm. going on, because these guys get physically stronger, but these ones get smarter, or these ones live longer, or whatever it mm-hmm. is. And then you have a little more of a typical war game, I guess, where you're still just trying to survive or destroy the other tribes or whatever it is. But you're also now, and it's weird that I came up with this and you didn't, because I don't care for the whole resource management thing, but like getting your tribe to be the biggest and strongest, but not becoming so big that you can't continue to feed them, you know,
mm-hmm.
cannibalistically on the corpses of the other tribes that you're fighting against. So that's a thought.
And if in both versions or in both ideas, you could easily include a mini plot or a mini game or an element where occasionally a boat full of Europeans turns up.
And you just get to eat them all.
Yeah. But like there's not enough to go around. So like one tribe might suddenly drop all of your hostilities to go see how many white men you can devour.
Well, you would also need a good way to model the fact that there's a very high chance of catching some sort of horrible plague from the Europeans,
mm-hmm.
but you shouldn't know that. So there has to be like a randomization mechanic where it's mm-hmm. like, okay, we could go eat these Europeans. They're really easy to kill and eat, but also we might all die of dysentery.
But we don't know it.
Right. So it has to be like there's a one in something chance. And so it's like, is it worth the risk? Because mm-hmm. you can never really escape the information that the players know mm-hmm. that they're.
You can do it once by using like a legacy mechanic where there's yeah. a sealed packet and that you instruct them to open it. And you're like, oh, they had smallpox. We all lost the game now.
Yeah.
But you get that one time ever.
Right.
And then it's spoiled on the internet and everybody knows what happened.
Yep.
I'd play that.
Yeah, I kind of like them both.
Who knew that cannibalism in elevators would work out that well? What about cannibalistic elevators? They're elevators Ooh. That eat other elevators?
Yeah, right. It works better with the space elevators thing.
Mm-hmm. Because space is scary.
Yeah. What if they're elevators that came from space?
What if they're elevators that know how to love?
That reminded me of the elevator in Hitchhiker's Guide.
Oh, yeah.
In the publisher offices. I had forgotten about that. I need to read that book again.
It's such a good book.
I think that's my next one. When I'm done with what I'm reading, I think it's time to go back to the Hitchhiker's Guide.
Smart.
Yeah. It's been a while.
Right?
I was thinking, well, you were thinking about how to do a cannibalism game, about a mixology game, because I had finished my gin and tonic, and I was sad that there was no more gin and tonic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a quick idea about, like, kind of a... You'd want it to be light. I don't think it would be a fun game that dragged on for a long time, but something like a very light deck builder, mm-hmm. and all of the different cards are different drinks that you can mix,
mm-hmm.
and they would have to have some kind of scale where they rate with one another, so that you're like, you know, you don't want to mix like I don't know, I guess you would have to have ingredients too, so you have to know that you don't want to mix like olive juice with Bailey's Irish Cream, right? That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's
there's no way that could possibly make a good drink.
That's unbelievably
nasty. Don't do
that.
You may do it if you need to get cards out of your hand or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But generally, your thing is like make drinks that are known to be good. Maybe bonus points for creating a new drink that doesn't exist in the, you know, the dictionary of drinks or whatever, the base set mm-hmm. of drinks, but that still score well on the chart as far as ingredients that work well with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly cards come through random. You're just drawing off the top of the deck, so you don't know what you're going to get, but there might be some premium ingredients that you can purchase out of a pool in the middle or something.
You know what you could do too? You could do customers, mm-hmm. like that are rolling across the border. For like, there's just a string of customers there, and uh-huh. you could be trying to make drinks that will match with some of them.
Oh, that'd be interesting. You could do it two ways too. You could have customers that have a specific drink, and you're like, well, I'll make it if I have the ingredients, but mm-hmm. if I don't, well, maybe you're just going to move down the line and tough. But also, you might have customers that like want a drink, but also like have a flavor profile preference. Mm-hmm. Like, I like sweet drinks, or I like drinks with a high alcohol content, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I like cheap drinks. And you could try to use the various little rating scales on your cards to make a drink that they would like that fits their palate.
If you really wanted to get crazy with it, you could do it. You could include an app like Alchemists has, so that you could take a picture of your however many ingredient cards that you laid out,
uh-huh.
and it pulls it into the app and tells you what drink that creates.
Nice. And also pulls it into the app and tells you if it's a drink that has never been created before, and then you can patent it and make no money, because I don't think anyone who creates drinks gets
it. But it adds it to the game's server database that we would maintain.
And you could then name it after yourself.
And now then everybody else who uses it knows that you made the squirrel nipple.
I was going to call it sex on my butt.
That also, that is another option.
Yep.
Good God, boy.
Frankly, there's probably already drinks in existence with both of those names.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Well, that's all I got. You got anything else?
That's what I got,
this segment? We're going to be right back after this word from our sponsors. And in the meantime, if you, if you're some sort of weird person who's like, I don't want to listen to these commercials, even though they're not real.
Commercials are real.
There's no such thing as commercials.
Oh.
You could take this brief time instead to contact us on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You could send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
I suppose you could, you know, multitask and do both, but you could also contact us on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or write it upside down on your belly.
Upside down as for, which way is upside down?
Yes.
Terrifying. We'll be right back.
This is a Mildly Alarming Radio News Breaking News Break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm Chep Holstein. Good evening. In national news, presidential candidate Donald Trump dropped a French fry between the door and the seat of his limousine today while traveling between campaign stops in East Carolina. He was unable to retrieve it because his fingers are too short. Sources close to the campaign indicate that Mr. Trump then screamed for 8 straight minutes without pausing for breath, at which point his Secret Service detail stopped and got him a new Happy Meal with chocolate milk.
In geography news, experts concur that East Carolina is a real state and that your public school education just failed you. It is, by all accounts, lovely.
And in hot dog news, I ate a hot dog for lunch today. Sources close to my tummy indicate that it had mustard and relish, and was, quote, delicious.
The karate world is heating up this week as new developments unfold in the Sensei Doug scandal. According to karate man Barry Lorpo, Sensei Doug does not have any karate friends, but rather a great many karate acquaintances. Reached for comment at his dojo, Sensei Doug did a pretty cool spin kick and broke our microphone. Reached for comment in the news van afterward, the mic guy said the kick was totally sweet.
And in Cubism news, I'm not really sure what they were going for there, and it makes me angry.
This has been your Mildly Alarming Radio News Breaking News Break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm a landlocked Asian nation.
What sort of population do you have?
8, Reg. We now return you to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And he's Johannes Stauffer.
And he's Tom Rich.
And now we've identified ourselves 2 times, so you should remember it this time.
This episode is sponsored by the Cheez-It Corporation.
Cheez-Its. They're like cheese, but also it.
It actually began as a nonprofit organization having nothing to do with crackers. They just wanted people to cheese things.
Mm-hmm.
Just anything.
Right.
It.
It, indeed.
In general, but people didn't understand, and they weren't getting the donations that they needed to keep things afloat, and so they started selling yellow crackers. Mm-hmm. I guess they're really more orange.
Some of them are white.
Well, I think that's a more recent
Development. Does it have anything to do with how old-timey criminals used to run from the cops? Such as, you know, Cheez-It the cops?
Has anyone on Earth ever said, geez, it's the cops?
No, that's what they used to say back in old movies. It's Cheez-It the cops.
Did they, though?
Yeah.
Cheez-It?
Yeah, Cheez-It the cops.
They said Cheez-It the cops.
Hold on, I'm going to look it up. I'm going to check this.
I don't believe you.
Yeah.
There's literally no reference to it anywhere, is there?
No, it exists.
You found nothing.
I'm finding it. I'm finding all sorts of references to it as an idiom.
Uh-huh.
Cheez-It on Urban Dictionary. To run away, to flee, to scramble, as if you just robbed a bank. Derived from the jive talk word from the 50s era. First said in the movie West Side Story. Cheez-It, fellas, it's the fuzz. Huh? Oh, owned. I know more about musical theater than you.
You could have just made that up. And also, I have no problem with you knowing more about musical theater than me.
Oh. Aren't you really proud of your knowledge of musical theater? Don't you know, like...
No, no one would ever be that way. No one would ever be proud of their knowledge of musical theater.
Well, somebody might.
No.
What about...
Just you. It's only you.
What about, what's his name? Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't he be proud of his knowledge of musical theater?
Just of the things that he made.
Can he really be said to have made them?
Yeah. Oh. Like, he wrote the music and the words.
Yeah, but it was somebody else who sang it.
Sure.
And wore the cat costumes. Well, I guess...
There's nothing to say he didn't wear a cat costume while writing Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
In fact, I don't see how he could have written it without wearing a cat costume, frankly. Really, all of his works scream composed while wearing a huge cat costume.
Yeah, in fact, he had a rubber stamp made. It was part of his signature on every manuscript, composed while wearing a cat costume.
Except, oddly enough, for
Phantom
cats.
Phantom of the Opera.
Right.
What's cats? What are you talking about?
Cats are...
I don't know what that is.
It's a landlocked Asian nation.
Oh, okay.
Cats, you know?
I don't know a lot about Asia.
Well, it's to the left of the ocean.
That's why they call it the Orient, which means right.
One time, I was in Minnesota, and some of my wife's family and I were touring the Mayo Clinic's research facility there.
Where they discover new ways to make sandwich spread.
Yeah, it's a strange place. But
is that where Miracle Whip came from?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. But we're walking around, and this tour guide is showing us about, and we
here they whip the eggs.
Yeah, and we'd passed a couple of groups of researchers, like the scientists who do the research, and my wife's grandmother, who is very old, a lovely lady, said to the tour guide, a lot of the researchers are Orientals. And she meant well. Like, she was like,
sure.
They all seem to be from Asia. And the guy, bless that man's heart, he rolled with his, like, yeah, we do get a lot of folks coming from Japan and China doing that kind of basic research stuff. It is true.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, Orientals, huh? Haven't heard that one in the wild. That's new.
I worked with a Japanese man at the camera store in high school, and the three crotchety old owners and the younger girls who worked there like year round who weren't just high school students.
Mm-hmm.
I think at some point every single one of them referred to him as Oriental.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't understand why that particular word is not okay anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just means right, as opposed to left, like, because it's on that side of the map.
Well, I think it's a connotation, not denotation thing.
But was there? I just don't know. That's what I'm saying. Was there a connotation, a negative connotation, at some point?
I think it's more that, not so much that the word itself was ever used particularly negatively, but like it was used as the term for people from that part of the world. In negative context, like it wasn't there. Like those, like Oriental is a word that means dumb poopy butthole guy. It was that they're like people from Orientals are less cool than British people.
Uh huh.
So I think it picked up its connotations that way.
So if at the time all of those people in that group had been referred to as Asians,
yeah,
but everything else was the same.
Yeah.
Now Asian would be the unacceptable term, and we would be calling them. Easties. I don't know.
Yeah, something. Something like, yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
It might also be a case where the term covers such a broad range. I mean, technically the Orient of old would be everywhere from like what, Turkey to Japan.
I thought it was just Far East.
I might be wrong though.
I don't know.
So it might be a case
Maybe Turkey is part of the Far East. I don't know.
It might be a case of that term was used to lump way too many people together that are very different from each other.
Hmm.
And that's not very nice.
It's also ridiculous because the concept of that being the east side of the world, which is a sphere.
Well,
it's kind of nonsensical.
It is a little nonsensical.
It's on that side of the map where we arbitrarily decided
right.
that there was a line.
Yeah, it's very different. I'm kind of disappointed that it's gone out of favor, though, if only because it means we don't get to use the Occident.
Right.
In opposition to it. And I like the sound of that word.
We could call them.
I don't think we should. I think any.
Any sense that begins with we should call them?
We could call them whatever.
I was just trying to figure. Problem. So in another context, I may only be in heraldry. Dexter means right and sinister means left.
I think the context for that is just Latin.
Is it? So where are Orient and Occident?
I would guess Greek, but I don't know that for sure.
Sure.
We have the internet.
I can't read or write. And neither can you.
Where are you, etymology? Oh, no. Orient is coming from Latin, actually.
See?
Ori from the Latin to rise. Rising or east. So, yeah, Dexter and Sinister were right and left, like, in terms of your hand. Orient appears to come more from direction.
Hmm.
You know what I literally just realized for the first time reading that definition?
What?
Orient, like referring to the Orient or Oriental rugs.
But also to orient something?
Yeah, it's the same word.
That's what's weird. It's one of those, like, if you want to get into things that are potentially offensive, first of all, sinister meaning left, but also evil.
Right, right. Well, that's because left-handed people, man.
Right? They're like redheads.
No, left.
Disgusting.
For those playing along at home who've never met me, I have red hair.
But to be dexterous really just means to be right-handed, but the usage really means to be adept.
Right.
Adroit. Like, it's good.
Yeah, like having a high dexterity in D&D.
So to orient something, as in to position it correctly, to point it in the right direction.
Yeah, is good.
The right direction. Oh my God. Come on, language.
Right? Wait.
I don't know.
Yeah. But then you can't occident something. Like, that's not a verb.
Yeah. I wonder if accident and occident are actually in any way related etymologically or if they just sound that way.
I don't know.
You know, we have the internet, Tom. We can find out.
I know, but I already looked up Orient, so I can't look up another thing. The tab's already open.
What is the relation between the words accident and occident? Both words go back to Latin, cadere, to fall, with two different prefixes, accedere, to happen, and occidere, to go down, to fall, to die, as of the sun, which goes down in the west. That is interesting and unexpected. Mm-hmm. This has been the Etymology Podcast with Tom and Johannes.
Where we're both stupid.
And dumb.
Yes.
Which mean the same things differently?
You know, that actually points to that kind of ties, but like, stupid and dumb kind of tie into our discussion of the word Orient or the Orient.
Mm-hmm.
It's another example.
You're saying that Oriental people are stupid and dumb?
No, I'm not going to go with that.
I'm sorry, internet.
No,
please don't dox me.
No, but but check it. It's a it's a euphemism treadmill, right? You start out with a term that just means a thing. It's like, this is just a term that refers to that, and then it becomes used in a negative way, and so then you have to come up with a new term. Dumb used to just mean can't talk.
Right.
And then it was like, well, can't talking is bad, so we're going to use that to insult people.
And those people never spoke up about why they didn't appreciate the use of the word.
Amazing. And so Orient, at first, is just like, oh, it's those countries over in that part of the world. And then gradually, if you use Orient to talk badly about those countries long enough, you've got to come up with a new word because Orient starts to soak up all those negative connotations.
And all of this really leads very slowly, but eventually into our second topic, which is word games.
I thought our second topic was the sovereign nation of Japan.
The sovereign nation of Japan. Games. Like Chinese checkers.
There's a game...
that joke probably wasn't okay either. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's just, the joke is just that Chinese checkers has a different country in its name.
Sure.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
What would be offensive about that?
I could have picked something like American checkers, which isn't a thing. I guess it's okay.
Yeah, no, there's no other joke you can make there. It's fine. I would have picked Canadian backgammon, but, you know, whatever.
I thought you were going to say Canadian bacon, which is not a game.
Isn't Canadian bacon
just... It's very real and very serious.
Isn't Canadian bacon just ham? It's just like
it's
slices
like
of ham.
It's like disappointing ham, yeah.
Yeah, it's not... Get your stuff together, Canada. This has been Tom fumbling around saying despite the fact that Johannes will just bleep it out anyway.
Yeah.
He'll put a farm animal noise over it. Or he might put a rocket engine this time.
Ooh. Now I have to find a rocket engine sound effect.
You don't have to. You could just make one with your mouth like this. It's rocket engine sound.
Yep.
Yep.
So we're talking about word games.
Word games. I played Scrabble a week or two ago.
Why did you do that? Wait, hold on. You were on vacation with your family.
Not really.
You were on vacation with your wife's family. Not vacation really. Just means you went to another place.
Yeah. Oh, in that
you were
case,
stuck
yes.
somewhere, not home, with other people.
Yes, I was there, and we happened to spot a Scrabble box. Somebody was like, oh, play Scrabble. So we played
the
Scrabble.
The number one use case for Scrabble.
Yeah. It was fine. Like, I don't think I'd actually ever played Scrabble before that. I think I'd played, like, a couple of online versions,
yeah.
Maybe.
We played Upwords in fifth grade.
I don't remember that.
Upwards is Scrabble for idiots because you can stack tiles on top of each other.
Uh-huh. I feel like word games like Scrabble fall into the same problem that trivia games fall into that we talked about last week. Continuity.
Yeah, totally on purpose, too.
Right? Where if you roll in with a huge vocabulary, you have an advantage. Like, you just... The number of words you know when you come to the table is fixed. I mean...
Yeah, it's not even vocabulary. I mean, I guess we could dig into the nitty-gritty of what vocabulary technically means, but it's not... It is more a trivial knowledge of... Word like lexicon, I guess, might be a more accurate term, though. I guess I could figure out the definitions of both of those and why they differ. But I know that cat with a Q is an excellent Scrabble word, Q-A-T, because of Scrabble.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that one I know the definition of because of a Bare Naked Ladies song. It's a type of evergreen shrub.
Huh.
But there are a lot of words I know because of crossword puzzles. I love crossword puzzles, but most of the crap in there, I don't actually know. I just know that a hint that sounds like this, especially when it comes to names, especially when it comes to sports names,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, the pitcher who something something, first name is this, this is the last name. I know that, don't know who that guy is. I have
sure.
no idea what they did. I know no useful, not that there is useful information to know about sports, but I don't know any information about those sports people. Mm-hmm. And so it makes knowledge of a word more trivial.
Because you don't
need
to.
Because you couldn't necessarily use it in a sentence.
Right.
You just know it because it is worth points or it fills the spaces that you need.
Mm-hmm. And it runs into a similar problem to trivia that we talked about where you show up and you're like, show up and like if you're known to read a lot or write a lot or have a big vocabulary, people are like, oh, this guy, he's a ringer. He's gonna whip us at Scrabble. And you're like, there's not a lot of options on the board. All I drew is consonants, man. What do you want from me?
Yeah, that is an interesting thing. It's not as much the case with crossword puzzles because being a guy with a large vocabulary is helpful in that context because you don't have a limited character set to work with.
Right.
But in Scrabble, it's like, it doesn't really matter how great I am at knowing words. It's how good I am at the sort of puzzly problem solving of making words out of a subset of letters, all of which have been arbitrarily assigned a point value.
Right. It doesn't help if I know how to spell, if I know the word coniferous, if I never get the letters to spell coniferous.
Right. And I don't think you can unless someone else already put some of them, because I think that's more letters than you ever have in
sure.
Scrabble.
I just wanted to say coniferous.
I know you did. On a side note, I saw a couple people playing a physical board game last week, I think. And it was Words with Friends, Board Game Edition.
Isn't that just Scrabble?
Yes.
Every day we move further from God's light.
Just going to let that sink in. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's a real shame right there. So I can't really think of a way to make a word game that would be interesting to me, I guess. Like, Scrabble is boring. It's just not
I honestly, like you said, I don't know if I've ever played Scrabble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, played actual Scrabble. I've played Words with Friends. I played Upwords in fifth grade. I don't know that I've ever sat down to play Scrabble. And similar to trivia games, I think the fun is more in sitting down and being like, all right, what words can you make with this this pile of tiles? It's almost like a word jumble than the actual gamification and competition of doing that, especially, and Scrabble is, I don't know about unique, but it stands out in the just needless rules lawyering that happens.
Yeah.
I think more than almost any other game, people are like, no, you can't do that. That word's not allowed. You can't use proper nouns. Mm-hmm. And it's weird rules lawyering because it's more, there are more house rules per like number of people who play the game, but also none of them would ever admit it to being a house rule. They'd be like, no, that is how it is played. If you are not doing it that way, you are playing the game incorrectly. Mm-hmm. It's polarizing just what people think is necessary for Scrabble. And I don't know if it's because it's so raw in that it's like, make words in the language that you share, do them correctly, adhere to these rules. The person who does it the best gets the most points and wins. Like, as a game, it's mechanically very raw and lends itself to that sort of tournament competitive play. But there is a lot of stuff of just like, there's an official Scrabble dictionary.
Sure.
But who cares? And like, what edition of it are you using? You're like, oh, I don't like the 2016 edition of the Scrabble dictionary because they decided to allow whatever, the word whatever. It wasn't in there before. I don't know. But like, it just, there's a lot of silly arbitrariness.
Yeah.
In Scrabble, I feel. Specifically.
You know, your rant just now, if you subbed out Scrabble dictionary for MLA handbook, you would have my feelings when I was trying to teach how to do citation styles this week.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because that's a hard one for me to teach because I'm just like, deep in my soul, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care how you cite your sources. I just, it's not a thing that I care about at all, but I have to show them.
I have a deep and abiding love for the MLA style book over the AP style book or whatever else, but I also do not care about source citations.
I don't at all. Like, I teach college English. I don't care. I'm sorry to my boss. I don't care about it at all.
Your final page should say, I read it on Wikipedia. Google it. Which is what you're going to do anyway. In fact,
yeah,
if they're submitting it on Blackboard, a robot is doing it for you anyway. It's doing that to make sure they didn't steal their paper from someone else. Do you use Blackboard?
Yep, I do. It's fine.
Yep, that's about my feelings.
It's actually better than it used to be.
Yeah.
Which, it's still just fine.
So, word games tend to encompass not a lot.
Word games seem to always fit in that space of board gaming where, like, Monopoly and checkers and stuff like that fit, where it's like, this is a game that either everybody already knows how to play or you can pretty much intuit what's going on in 30 seconds. And that way, when you're playing it with your cousin who you see once a decade, it's just fine. You don't have to put any effort in.
Yeah.
It can just grease the evening until you both get to go to bed.
Yeah. I won't say I love word games, I guess, because it really depends on the context. The idea of Scrabble is fine. I think because I do have a fairly large vocabulary and a decent grasp on the English language, and so in most situations, I will wreck another person in a game of Words with Friends mm-hmm. or Scrabble or Upwords or whatever, like make the most words the fastest or the best,
mm-hmm.
Which is not a great way to play games, though it is how I think most people have interacted with most games for most of the time. But yeah, I think for some people, not me, Scrabble is probably every bit as painfully unpleasant as Risk or Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
In that it, first of all, maybe you just don't care. Maybe it's not an intriguing mechanic. Maybe you don't care about knowing words. Maybe you have a smaller vocabulary and that's not really a helpful way to expand it. So I'm not going to defend it all that much, I guess. But
mm-hmm.
I don't mind it as much as I mind Monopoly or
sure.
Risk. But yeah, it's a thing. I think that's something that comes up with just raw mechanic games like that. Chess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Monopoly's not as raw, but it doesn't really have a story behind it. It doesn't have a whole lot going on. It's still a roll and move.
The story of capitalism.
The story of capitalism, as told by Tom Rich.
Once upon
Chapter
a time.
One.
Once upon a time, there was a man named Larry Capitalism.
Are there other more, a little broader word games? So I like word games a lot. We were talking about this off mic earlier. I like word games on my phone a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Bookworm. I had one that was sort of a...
I think we talked about this in the first segment a bit.
Oh, we may have.
Yeah.
There's one I liked that tiles drop that have letters on them, and it's a similar thing to Bookworm or Boggle, where mm-hmm. you have to like make words out of letters that are connected to one another. And you have to keep clearing the board kind of Tetris style.
Mm-hmm.
And if they reach the top, you lose. And I like them because I'm pretty good at them. They're mindless, but they're not like entirely mindless. It's not Bejeweled.
Sure.
It's like there's still my brain is engaged to some degree. But I feel like that style of game lives in the app, like the computerized automated world, a lot better than it does in the board game world.
I'd buy that.
So you don't see a whole ton of word games that aren't just some remix of Scrabble. You could make the argument to some degree that, say, Codenames is a word game because it utilizes a lot of words. But it's not really a game about the words. It's a game about charades
mm-hmm.
or you know, describing, defining. So it's wordy. I don't know. Would you call that a word game?
Not real. I mean, you're not making... It's more of a meaning game than... It's not about spelling.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, that's kind of the point I am not making, but could have, I guess, is, you know, is a word game really a spelling game?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just a language game?
Oh. And what really is language then? Because could not a math game be a language using the language
of numbers?
No, that's
a math
numbers?
Game. It's for...
But is not math its own language? As
yes,
rich
it's
and
the language for
as rich and textured,
boring jerks.
As Urdu or Russian, and is not in a way all language in fact math.
No,
let us meditate upon this.
No, let's not, and say we didn't.
It's too late. I'm already meditating.
Stop it.
Can't.
If you ohm even once, I'm gonna slap you.
That's
you're so tempted, aren't you? I can see it. You really want to.
I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to sink that low.
Good.
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 Good. Is that it?
No, I mean, I feel like there's a lot more we could talk about. We've pretty much just talked about Scrabble.
Yeah, I mean,
not to be confused with Scrapple, which is delicious.
I mean, like, if you broaden out the topic, like if you bring in code names into word games, you're more, I mean, because code names depends upon meaning of the words, not the form of them.
Uh-huh.
So like, I mean, it depends upon meaning and association between words. You've got to be able to give a clue that will lead your team to picking out the particular word you want them to.
Uh-huh.
Word or words. Whereas Scrabble just depends upon spelling and being able to spell. So they're pushing on two different buttons, I feel like.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard to put them, I think, under the same umbrella in that way as both being word games, because they're very different kind of, like, it doesn't, as you were saying earlier, it doesn't matter if you have any inkling of the meaning of a word in Scrabble as long as you know that it's a word.
Uh-huh.
Whereas with code names, it doesn't matter if you have any idea how to spell a word as long as you can get at the meaning well enough to clue your allies into it. So I think they're pushing on different buttons.
I feel like there's... So crossword puzzles, to me, kind of are the perfect word game.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a game and that you can't compete with them. But, well, I guess, I mean, you can if you're both trying to solve the same puzzle. There are crossword puzzle competitions, but because it's taking the Scrabble aspect, knowing a word is a word,
mm-hmm.
but you also have to know the meaning. And one of the things that Codenames does is you have this grid of cards with a bunch of words on them, and you have to describe, ideally, you want to pick a, what is it, a one sentence or one, it's not just one
you have
word.
One word. It's really one number. Word? It's one word and one number.
To encapsulate as many of the words that you want your team to guess while leaving out the other words mm-hmm. on the board that you want them not to guess. And a crossword puzzle does a very similar thing often. It's usually more to try to trick you, but it's a similar thing where they'll do these very punny twists on a word definition or hint.
Mm-hmm.
And so... And because, especially because of English, I actually kind of wonder how well crossword puzzles work in any other language, because English is so weird and amorphous, and we have all these words that mean very different things sometimes, depending mm-hmm. on if they're a noun or a verb or a gerund or a whatever they are. And I think there's not as much of that in a lot of other languages, which is why people find it so difficult to learn English. But right. You've got a similar thing, and I'm struggling for an example here. But
well, we had one just earlier tonight when we talked about Orient as referring to nations in the East, and Orient referring to
yeah
making a direction.
There are even at least in my mind, because I have trouble flipping the switch sometimes, even more difficult things. But yeah, but actually that is good, I guess, because your hint could be at a very simple level, the East, and it could be Orient. As a noun, mm-hmm. or it could be to point in the right direction, and it could be orient as a verb.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're working your way through the hints and your brain is already kind of clicked into everything is a verb, then one is going to jump out at you and the other one's going to be like, what are they talking about? The right. West? Is this a... So, not a super great example because I'm not a crossword puzzle editor, but... I feel like that sits in a space that if we're going to agree to call a crossword puzzle a word game, makes Codenames and Scrabble equally word games.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
I don't know.
That's a good point.
I like them all. And that's my problem, I guess. And then that is part of why I love that I don't need another person to do a crossword puzzle. I just mm-hmm. do them on the toilet. Do them on the toilet a lot. They are excellent toilet fodder.
And now we know more about Johannes' poopy plans here. So,
gotta Yay. Do something on the toilet. You don't always have a book.
I poop.
Or time for... Well, yeah. That's what your butt is engaged in, but that doesn't really require a whole lot of brain engagement.
I'm not going to lie. I'm rarely there long enough to really be like, I wish I had something to do with my time.
That may be because... You don't have something to do with your time, and maybe you would be there longer if you did, and that probably would be bad. But you know, that's where I am. So,
Rich, where the hell have you been for the last 7 hours?
Had to finish this book of crossword puzzles. Yeah. I was reading a novel. I was writing a novel.
So, Mr. Rich, your novel, Iowa Thunder, is dominating the bestseller lists. How did you compose it? Mostly on the can.
Fantastic.
That's where I was. Took a lot of toilet breaks.
Actually, what I've been doing lately in the morning is Duolingo on the toilet. And I think...
That, I don't know what the hell you just said, but it sounds
Duolingo
foul.
is an application for your phone or web browser with which you can help yourself learn another language.
Are you learning Spanish?
No, I'm relearning German. All the things I forgot from high school.
I never knew any German.
And I really think that their slogan should be "Learn German on the toilet," because that's a fantastic ad slogan and completely accurate.
Is the German word for toilet Scheißerhausen?
It is now. It's just toilet or is toiletta, it? I think.
Oh, that's disappointing.
But house is good too.
Scheißerhausen. See, I know German words.
Yeah, as previously established, you think Sprechen Sie Deutsch means open the door.
It does.
It does not.
What does it mean then?
It means do you speak German?
Right. Open the door, like I said.
Uh-huh. Well, do you have anything else for word games?
I'm about set. I'm going to Sprechen Sie Deutsch in a minute here.
If you learn German on the toilet, you should let us know on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Or you can let us know on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or you could let us know on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also rate and review us as well as listen to us. That kind of rhymed. On iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio. Those are the things.
Or you can Neller Frauen your wiener schnitzel in the Scheißerhausen and we'll know about it.
Gross.
I really hope I didn't say something too unholy there. Good night. You ever been stuck behind a Winnebago with a stick on the back that says "I floor it for Jesus" and thought, "I'd like that, but all the time"? Now you can with Rumpa Stickers, the new line of butt bling from Gunchland. Rumpa Stickers adhere directly to the buttock and tell the world what's important to you. Dedicated Ford man, we've got Rumpa Stickers that'll make it clear what kind of tough you're built. Big fan of Steely Dan? Your backside will make that clear to one and all. Member of an obscure cult dedicated to Frida Kahlo's huge eyebrow? We don't have one of those until you get it set up with our custom Rumpa Sticker service. We got lines of Rumpa Stickers to serve any need. Going out to the club? Make sure your dance moves are flashed up butt style with a crumper sticker. Need to break up with your special someone? Pick a cheek and slap on a dumper sticker to send them on their way. You a camel? Humpa Stickers, friend. Humpa Stickers. The future of butts is now, so check out our website at www.jazzupmybutt.com today.